Hare Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, King Parikshit asks a total of 17 questions over the 90 chapters. So tonight we're going to read one of his questions and one of the answers given by Shukadev Goswami. The question goes as follows. Said Vishnurata, why are Krishna's devotees so poor? Lord Shiva's devotees, in general, seem to own much more. Since Krishna is much wealthier than Shiva, I suspect, this fact seems just the opposite of what one would expect. Sukadeva Goswami answers as follows. Lord Shiva interacts with matter. That is his domain. Appeasing Shiva makes objectives easy to obtain. Lord Krishna, on the other hand, transcends the mundane realm. His devotees, like him, are pure and never overwhelmed. Your grandfather, King Yudhisthira, once raised this paradox directly to Lord Krishna, who responded with these thoughts. And here we have a verse from the 10th canto, which is famous, was quoted often by Srila Prabhupada. Yasyaham anugrahami harishe tadhanam shanai. When someone truly pleases me, I pilfer all his wealth. His relatives and friends then leave this beggar to himself. Abandoned, sad, and thwarted, he befriends my devotees and quickly gains my mercy in exceptional degrees. Although I give enlightenment and freedom from distress, conditioned souls in general want to keep what they possess. So they appeal to gods who are much easier to please, though when they thrive, they sometimes try to kill their deities. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and the Supreme Lord Vishnu all can elevate a person or create a person's fall. Unlike Lord Vishnu, Shiva and Brahma are quickly pleased, as wicked Vrika once confirmed by his activities. So here Sukadev gives the story of Vrikasura as an example of the materially motivated worshipper of the demigods. The demon Vrika met the saintly Narada one day and asked which god would fill his wish the most efficient way. Said Narada, if you ask nicely, Shiva won't take long, but he gets angry instantly if you do something wrong. So Vrika worshipped Shiva with a sick, bizarre device. He cut his flesh and burned it in the fire of sacrifice. A week went by. Impatient, Vrika dropped that plan. Instead, he washed his hair and bared his axe, prepared to cut his head. As Vrika poised to lop his head directly in the fire, Lord Shiva swiftly grabbed his arm and mercifully inquired, what is it that you want, my friend? Here, let me mend your wounds. Why give your head? A cup of water is fine. I'll grant your boon. The crooked Vrika cackled as he gave this sick reply. When I touch someone's head, I wish that he at once shall die. Lord Shiva showed consent and gave his head a little shake, although he feared that he was giving nectar to a snake. To test Lord Shiva's blessing, Vrika raised his hand and said, I'd like, my lord, to see if this will work upon your head. Lord Shiva turned and, terrified, fled swiftly into space. The mystic Vrika ran behind and managed to keep pace. Since no one counteracts the boons that Shiva has bestowed, the gods could only stare as Shiva ran through their abode. At last he reached the Sea of Milk, that luminous domain inhabited by Vishnu that the greatest souls attain. Lord Vishnu knew that Shiva had been threatened with demise and stepped in to protect him by assuming a disguise. Appearing 5 or 6 years old, with beads and deerskin dress, Lord Vishnu summoned Vrika, smiled, and pleasantly expressed, my dear respected sir, you've come so far. You must be tired. Please stop and rest your body, for your body is required for any great pursuit. That's good, relax. Now, if I'm fit, please tell me of your mission. I would love to hear of it. Lord Vishnu's words pleased Vrika, and the demon gladly stayed, explaining in complete detail his clever escapade. The youthful student listened well, then shook his head in doubt. "In this case," said the student, "we have something to find out. This Shiva, cursed by Daksha, gobbles flesh and ghostly haunts. He gives his fellow ghosts and goblins anything they want. His blessing must be useless. Quickly, touch your head and see, for if he lied, you must reply and end his treachery." Enchanted and bewildered by the student's artful words, the foolish Vrikka touched his head. A piercing blast was heard as Vrikka's head exploded. Then, their voices joined as one, the gods cried out in admiration, "Victory! Well done!" As denizens of heaven showered flowers on the scene, Lord Vishnu said, "Lord Shiva, Vrikka's deeds were so obscene, he met a violent destiny. What else could he expect, offending you, a kindly guru, wise in all respects?" Lord Krishna, Vishnu's origin, directly manifests the energies of matter, spirit, truth, and all the rest. A soul who hears or tells how Shiva's problem was dispelled shall overcome his enemies and birth and death as well. So now, Giri Raj Maharaj, would you kindly give the purport to this pastime?
You might have forgotten the initial question, which seemed to cause some concern on your faces, that the devotees of Lord Shiva are often materially opulent, although Lord Shiva himself lives under a tree, and the devotees of Lord Vishnu or Krishna are often poor, although Lord Vishnu or Krishna is the most opulent personality. So in case that question made you nervous and made you question whether you were in the right movement or not, I thought I would discuss this question in a little more detail. Now, of course, the very first point of spiritual knowledge is that I am not the body, I am the soul within the body, and therefore I really have no relationship with the material world. My real relationship as an individual soul is with the Supreme Soul, with Krishna, in the spiritual world. But although we may have such knowledge in theory, we are conditioned to identify with the body and to think that having comforts and facility for the senses of the body are very important, and we don't want to be without them. Now, Srila Prabhupada told a rather humorous story about Lord Shiva. Of course, he was making the point about how chaste and faithful a wife should be to her husband. Of course, the relationship should be reciprocal. The husband should also provide whatever the wife needs, materially and spiritually. Lord Shiva and his wife, Parvati, live under a tree. That was sort of the basis of the question, that they live apparently in poverty, but their devotees are rich. So we all know how friends and family encourage us to develop materially. If we want to devote ourselves exclusively to spiritual life, or even primarily to spiritual life, they will come and advise us not to be extreme. We can have a little place for Krishna consciousness, but not too much space. And rather we should pursue material goals like they're pursuing. So it even happens on a higher level. And people were sort of advising Lord Shiva and Parvati, why are you living under a tree? You should have a house. So hearing the same thing again and again and again, they thought, all right, well, everyone is saying we should have a house, so okay, we'll have a house. And of course, Lord Shiva and Parvati are extraordinarily powerful. They can create a universe if they want. So what kind of house? All right, so they made a house made of gold. And they invited their friends to the housewarming event. And among the invitees was a sage, I believe, Augusta Muni. And he came with thousands of disciples, hungry disciples. And so Parvati prepared prasad and fed them all, but in the course of feeding them all, she exhausted the stock of supplies in the kitchen pantry. So after they were fully satisfied, the sage asked, what about dakshina? You haven't given me dakshina. So they said, well, we don't have anything to give you. I mean, whatever we had in the house, we've already served to you and your disciples. Otherwise, and we don't have anything else. Said, well, you invited us. You have to give dakshina. Where's our dakshina? They're thinking, what to do? We have nothing to give. So finally, they decided, we'll give you the house. When Srila Prabhupada told the story, he also laughed. And he said, after the ceremony, they were back living under the tree. So now, what is our position as devotees of Krishna? Are we going to end up poor? Of course, that question itself is deceptive because we all end up with nothing. Mrityu sarvaharas chaham. Death comes and takes away everything. So there's no question of us having anything or keeping anything. That's out of the question. But still, we might think, well, in the meantime, what will happen? So the real purport, if the question is superficially exactly what it was, as stated, but there's a deeper purport, which is that Lord Shiva will give boons without considering very deeply what the effect of the boon will be. And so we have the example of Rikasura, that Shiva gave him the boon that whosoever head he touched would immediately die. That's not, if you look at it from a certain point of view, that's not a very prudent type of boon to give to someone. And similarly, Ravana, he was a worshipper of Shiva, and he attained great power by the grace of Shiva, but he used the power for terrible purposes. And Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sometimes chides Lord Shiva that you should be more circumspect in giving boons. You shouldn't just indiscriminately give boons like that. So it's not exactly that Krishna takes away a devotee's wealth or opulence, but he's very considered in dealing with his devotee what will be best for his devotee. If it's best for the devotee, he may give him tremendous wealth. But if he thinks it's best for his devotee, at least temporarily, he will take away his wealth. If the wealth is an impediment to his spiritual development. Srila Prabhupada quoted this verse, Yasyaha Manu Grinami Harishe Tandanam Shanai, in relation to himself. It was predicted that Srila Prabhupada would become the wealthiest man in India. And as a young man, he was very successful in his career, and he had a very successful business in pharmaceuticals. But then things started to go wrong with his business, and eventually, while he was on a business trip, his own worker ransacked his office and plundered whatever was there to take. And it was a very heavy blow to his business. And Srila Prabhupada thought of this verse, Yasyaha Manu Grinami Harishe Tadanam Shanai. Is this what's happening to me? He consulted one of his, or two of his god brothers. Is this what's happening to me? And then he had dreams, or that his Guru Maharaj was calling him to follow him. And he would wake up in a panic. Guru Maharaj calling me to leave home and follow him and preach. But anyway, there's a history, and in the end, Srila Prabhupada did return. He took sannyas, and he came to America, and the rest is history. Now, when I first met Srila Prabhupada in Boston in 1969, a question was put to him by someone in the audience after a talk. Are you really happy? And Srila Prabhupada replied that when I was in India, I had 4 children, and there were always so many problems. And now that I have left my home and come to America, I have 400 children, and they love me, and I love them, and we have no problems. And he made the point that one who gives to Krishna is not the loser, but he's the gainer by hundreds and millions of times. Then the man said, well, that's a material answer. And Srila Prabhupada replied, I have many other platforms of happiness, but I have given an answer that you can understand. And so now why would Krishna take away someone's opulence? If the person's attachment to his wealth and material facility proves to be an impediment to the person's development of Krishna consciousness. But once a person passes the stage of material attachment and is able to use opulence in Krishna's service, then Krishna can give him unlimited opulence, as he gave to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, first Krishna tested me by taking everything away, and later Krishna tested me by giving me everything. And coming back to the prediction that Srila Prabhupada would become the wealthiest man in India, Srila Prabhupada later commented that at that time, the Birla family was the richest in India. But he was saying the Birlas or any wealthy family anywhere, they might have 10 homes, 5, 10. How many homes can they have? And Srila Prabhupada said, and I have 108 homes, not more than 108 homes. So what rich man in the material world has 108 homes? And especially in India, it was considered extremely prestigious to have a European servant. Jawaharlal Nehru, when he was living in England, at great expense, he kept a European servant for his prestige. And Srila Prabhupada said, by then his disciples were beyond the hundreds, they were in the thousands. He said, I have thousands of European and American servants. And I don't pay them anything. Rather, they pay me. So, you know, what rich man, Srila Prabhupada is saying, you know, what rich man has that kind of opulence? So, it's true, the one who gives to Krishna is not the loser, but the gainer by millions of times. So, if a devotee is sincere, but he has some material attachment that is an obstacle, Krishna may take it away. And that's his mercy. And our acharyas give the example of a loving parent. Sometimes a loving parent will kiss the child or give the child a sweet. And sometimes the same loving parent will reprimand the child or give the child a punishment. But both are meant for the benefit of the child. Both are loving, both are manifestations of the loving care of the parent. So Krishna is like a loving parent, and according to what we need, he might give us sweets to encourage us, or if he thinks we need it, he might give us some bitter medicine. But both are ultimately meant for our improvement. And a surrendered devotee accepts whatever treatment the Lord metes out to him, because he knows that whatever the Lord is doing for him is for his benefit. And quite often, we don't know what's really for our benefit. Some years ago, I read like a little news item that someone had won the lottery, and I don't know how many millions of dollars, and became so excited that he had a heart attack and died. So really, we don't know. We might want something very badly, and it might turn out to be the death of us. And we might avoid something like death, and it might turn out to be the greatest blessing. And wise people in various traditions understand this fact. There's a story in the Chinese tradition, I've mentioned it before. There was a wise Chinese farmer, and he had two horses. So somehow one of the horses broke loose, and the neighbors all came and said, "Oh, how terrible. You had two horses and now one is gone. How terrible." He said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." So his son went out to look for the lost horse. And he came back. He didn't find that one, but he came back with two other horses. So then the neighbors came and said, "Oh, how wonderful. You had two horses, now you had three." And the wise Chinese farmer said, "Maybe yes, maybe no." So then, one of the horses was a little wild, and the son was trying to break in the horse, and in the process he was thrown from the horse and broke his leg. So all the neighbors came and said, oh, how terrible, your son has broken his leg. Maybe yes, maybe no. So then the king's men came to enlist healthy young men in the army. So they came looking for the farmer's son to enlist him in the armor. And then they saw he's got a broken leg, he's in a cast. So all the neighbors, oh, how wonderful, your son avoided the army. And he said, maybe yes, maybe no. And like this, the story goes on. So we are not actually very good at predicting what is good for us, what will make us happy. But Krishna knows. And therefore, it is wise for us to trust in him. Now, in, as just to make this point a little more clear, so in Delhi, after the first Delhi Pandalat Kanat circus, which was attended by like 20,000 people, it was a huge success. So after the Pandal program, Srila Prabhupada spent a few days in somebody's house in Delhi, and the father of a pious young man who was translating Prabhupada's books into Hindi, the boy's father came to meet Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada knew him, and they had a very cordial relationship. So they were talking, and Srila Prabhupada asked the boy's father, are you still smoking? And the man looked down and said, yes, Srila Prabhupada, I haven't been able to give it up. And then the man said, can't I get some special mercy? And Srila Prabhupada said, special mercy? Yes, there is such a thing as special mercy. Yasyaham anugrinami. When Krishna gives his devotee some special mercy, the first installment of the special mercy is he takes everything away from the devotee. So, you want special mercy? He said, no, no, Prabhupada. No, I'll do it myself. I'll give it up myself. So, although it was a humorous exchange, but there's a profound truth in that. That if we have some facility that can be used in Krishna's service, we should use it in Krishna's service. Otherwise, if we use it for our sense gratification and that becomes an obstacle in our spiritual progress, then Krishna may take it away. But that's for our benefit. But it's a little more painful process than giving it up voluntarily. But sometimes we just don't have the strength to give it up ourselves, and Krishna helps, and we should take it as mercy. And when he sees that now that residual desire to enjoy has been purified, and he can give us opulence without it becoming an impediment, that we can use it in his service, then he can give any amount, or not. But especially if one is a preacher, he can use opulence in in Krishna's service. There are others, Bhajananandis, they don't need it, they don't want it. But for preaching, we can use. But anasattasya vishayan, without attachment, use it in Krishna's service. So, that question about Krishna's devotees being poor, it's true, but within a limited context. And I'm sure many of you know the story of Sudama Vipra, Krishna's childhood friend from the Gurukul, when they were studying in the school of Sandipani Muni. But Sudama Brahmin was very poor. It's a very sweet story, which we don't have time to discuss in detail now, but in brief, a pure devotee never asks the Lord for anything material. And Sudama Brahman, although he was very poor, he was happy. He was happy as he was, happy in Krishna consciousness, happy as he was. But his wife was concerned that her husband was very thin and frail. I mean, there's that. Anyway, and so she, out of concern for her husband's health, she suggested, why don't you visit your old school friend Krishna? He's living in Dwarka, in royal opulence, and he might help you. So Sudama went to visit him, and he brought a small offering of chipped rice, which his wife borrowed. They had so little, they didn't really have anything. And he was so ashamed, he didn't even want to offer it to Krishna. But Krishna noticed it. He said, oh, what is that you have? Oh, no, nothing. No, what is that? What is that? Then he gave him, and Krishna took a morsel, and he was about to take a second morsel when Rukmini, the goddess of fortune, intervened and snatched it away and said that just by Krishna's accepting that one morsel from you is enough to fulfill all your desires for eternity. Anyway, there are many explanations about why she snatched it away. But Krishna didn't, so Sudama didn't ask for anything and Krishna didn't give him anything. And Sudama left very happy, just thinking of Krishna, Krishna's love and kindness. And so he went home, expecting that his wife would be disappointed, that he didn't even ask and didn't get anything. And then when he got close to the place of his residence, he saw there was a huge palace with beautiful gardens and servants. So Krishna had, rewarded him. But Sudama was not, I mean, he accepted it, of course, he accepted it, but he was not particularly overwhelmed with happiness, because his happiness was on another platform. His happiness was in Krishna consciousness. He accepted it as the Lord's mercy, as the Lord's prasad. But he was equipoised, and his only prayer was that in whatever condition I'm in, and especially in opulence, that I should not forget the Lord. And that's really the devotee's only desire and prayer. And opulence can sometimes be bewildering. And so that was Sudama's prayer then. I will accept this opulence as the Lord's mercy, but my real desire is that I should not forget the Lord under any circumstance. And that desire was fulfilled by the Lord, and that was the greatest benediction. So that's what we should pray for. Other things come and go. I've seen it. Money comes, money goes, comes again, goes again. It's not worth getting all worked up about. Of course, grihasthas may have more to think about, but still, the fact is that it comes and goes. But Krishna takes care of his devotee. No matter what, Krishna takes care of his devotee. Whether the market's up or down, Krishna takes care of his devotee. So you all are very fortunate to have come to the lotus feet of Krishna, to the opportunity to serve Krishna in Krishna consciousness. And I hope you'll continue to come again and again and take full advantage of the association and knowledge and opportunity for service. Hare Krishna.